listening to All the Best, stories and documentaries from around Australia. Our show is produced at FBI Radio Sydney and is coming to you via the Community Radio Network. I'm Georgia Moody, and with me today is Belinda Lopez, our features executive producer. Hi, Belinda.
Hi.
Today, we're coming to you direct from the This Is Not Art Festival in Newcastle. For those of you who don't know, This Is Not Art is an annual art festival showcasing the work of young and emerging creatives from across Australia. On this week's show, we're exploring the explosion in live storytelling. And for those of us who love true stories, it's a really exciting time to be here in Newcastle. Today, we've got three stories from a live event called the Storytelling Expo. Belinda, you were there. Tell us what it was like.
Oh, it was just an amazing event to be a part of. There were storytelling groups from all over Australia that came to this one event, and these groups seem to have sprung up at the same time. There's a yarn storytelling group in Brisbane, Melbourne and Sydney, and they're unaffiliated with each other. They just, you know, sprung up independently. What they do have in common is that they were all inspired by the American live storytelling show, The Moth. It's a really good listen. And last night there was just this amazing vibe in the room, you know, these storytellers coming together from all over the place to share their stories.
Hopefully you'll be able to pick up on that vibe in these recordings. Our first storyteller is from Yarn Brisbane, and her name is Nicole Crowe. Just a heads up, there's a language warning on this story.
So, my dad has a, some would call it inappropriate, I would probably call it unusual relationship with animals. So we just moved into this new neighbourhood as well. And so I'm in my room, and outside in the house, I hear the dog start to like completely lose his shit, like barking and yelping and sliding all over the floorboards and just running in circles and just completely going mental. And then about 3 seconds later, my dad starts to do the same. And so I come out of my room, and Dad and the dog are pressed up against the veranda rail, looking over into the neighbor's yard, and in the neighbor's yard, pressed up against the fence, on their side, there's this enormous black shiny snake. It would have been about 3 meters long. It had a head like a fist. It was so huge that you could just about see each individual scale on it from 5 meters away. Like, it was a monster, and it was really pissed off too, because the dog was losing his shit. So dad's like just completely like freaking out, and he's like, Sharon, to my mum. Sharon, come here, quick, come here. Mum comes out, and she looks over and she sees the snake, and she's like, no, just leave it. Stephen, leave it. And I'm like, Dad, you know, look, we just moved into this neighbourhood. The neighbours already think we're shit. Let's not prove it. But Dad didn't hear any of this because he was already running down the stairs out the front door. And so Mum and I are chasing him into the neighbour's yard going, don't, just leave it, Dad. Come on, leave it. And the neighbour is standing in the yard looking at the snake, and he's in the army. He's this massive, you know, crew cut dickhead in his fatigue gear, and he's standing there with his wife and his two little kids, and he's like, stay back, everybody stay back, it's too dangerous, I will get the shovel. And Dad just pushed him out of the way and threw himself head first onto the snake. And my mum is standing there going, oh God, not again, throws herself onto the back of the snake, because the snake is so big it needs two people. And the neighbor's face just drops, you know, he's just been in 1 second, he's been completely irrevocably emasculated by my 50-year-old parents. And I'm standing there and I'm like, dude, I'm really sorry. This is just the thing that they do. Like, I hate it. It's embarrassing. I'm really sorry. I wish I could do something, but I can't. Sorry. And so they've got this snake and they've got it up off the ground, and Mum's on the back and she's like, Stephen, I told you I hate doing this. Why do you make me do this? And the snake's trying to kill everyone. And she's like, she's peeling its tail from off her face. And she's like, I hate this. Why do you make me do this? And so they got this 3 meter long. I think it was poisonous. I still contend that it was poisonous. Dad doesn't think so, but I think he's crazy. So they're holding the snake, and I'm like, oh, Dad, okay, you're cool. You got a snake, eh? Awesome. What are you going to do with it now? And Dad's on the front, and he's like, you know, trying to kill him with fangs. And he goes, oh, look, I don't know. Let's just go inside and think about it. And I said, no, you can't bring the snake inside. It's really enormous. And so we're in the house with the snake. And Dad says, I know what we'll do with it. Let's put it in your brother's wardrobe. And mum's going, no. And mum was, you know, really against it, but there was nothing she could do because she was on the back, so she got dragged up the stairs by Dad holding the front of the snake and into my brother's room, and snake goes in the wardrobe and door's closed. And I'm like, okay, cool, my brother was out. And then Dad spent the rest of the afternoon completely freaking, going, where is he, when's he coming home, where is he, is he at work, should we call him, let's call him. I'm like, if you call him, he's going to be suspicious. And so Dad spent the whole afternoon sitting by the front window through the curtains, every car that came up the street, is that him, wasn't him. And then eventually my brother's car pulls into the driveway and Dad was like, downstairs, front door, boom, hello, son. How was your day? And my brother's like, it's fine, weird man, why are you blocking the doorway? And Dad says, oh, you know what? I think you should go upstairs and change your shirt. And my brother, Clayton's like, why? and Dad says, no reason, just, yeah, go and change your shirt. And my brother's like, do I stink? And Dad's like, no, just, I think it'd be a good idea, go upstairs, change your shirt, do it for your mother. And then immediately my brother says, you put a snake in my wardrobe, didn't you? And Dad's like, no, why would I do? No, I didn't do that, stupid boy, no. And Mum and I at this point are just like rolling on the ground laughing, going, yeah, you did, it's really big. I think it's poisonous. Don't go in there. And Dad's like, Oh, how did you know? Like, stamping his foot like a really pissed off child. Like, joke's ruined. Oh, how did you know? And Clayton says, oh, well, you know, I am part of this family and I'm not stupid, so you put a snake in my wardrobe. And so we go upstairs, open the wardrobe, snake's there, really mad, curled up in the corner like a big knot of maritime rope, like angry little coal eyes, hissing and shit. Like, it was just ridiculous. And I'm like, oh, okay, Dad, your little joke seems to have failed. So how are we going to get it out? And Dad says, oh, it's all right, we'll get it out. I'll get the broom. So he gets the broom and he's trying to lever it out with a broom and a pillowcase. And it didn't come out. It just wedged itself deeper into the back of the wardrobe and got even more angry. And so Mum says, oh, look, we'll call the snake catcher. This is ridiculous. We'll call the snake catcher. He says, no. I will deal with this. So snake was in the wardrobe for 4 days. And during that time, nobody slept because, I thought I was going to wake up in the middle of the night and the thing was going to be wrapped around my neck. And my brother, you know, he's like, oh, don't mind me, Mr. Snake. I'm just getting a pair of pants, you know. He had to do that for 4 days. And so eventually, yeah, because after 4 days, we were thinking, well, snake's going to be pretty hungry by now. It's going to come out. So got to call the snake catcher. So we called the snake catcher and he come round. And he's like, Dad says, oh, there's a snake, get rid of it. And the snake catcher's like, oh, how did they get in here? And Dad says, oh, I don't know, it's a snake. Like, they just get in places. You know what, it's a snake, it's a job, get rid of it. It's been here for like a couple of hours. It's fine, get rid of it. And the snake catcher's kind of, oh, right, okay. And he's looking around, you know, for any missing windows, holes in the wall, some feasible way for this massive snake to have got in the house without anybody noticing. And Dad's just like, look, just get rid of him. And so he did successfully capture and remove the snake, which was good for our sleeping patterns. But, the neighbours, you know, they already thought we were a little bit weird, and oddly enough, they didn't talk to us again, and we moved. Thank you.
Nicole Crowe, this is all the best, and today we're bringing you stories from the This Is Not Art Festival in Newcastle, stories told live at a storytelling expo. And our next story actually comes from you, Belinda.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually performed this next story at Sydney's first Now Hear This Story Slam. And Now Hear This was set up by Melanie Tate. She's a great Australian storyteller. And she was also inspired by The Moth and wanted to bring it to an Australian audience.
And this story is about your Spanish heritage. Are both your parents Spanish?
Yep, both. Pure-blooded Spanish.
Great. Let's hear it.
I heard, you know, a bit of Spanish when I was growing up as a kid. I heard it when my grandmother was making arroz y verduras, that's rice and vegetables. I heard it when my dad was cut off while driving. ¡Me cago en la puta madre! But, you know, I heard it a little bit, but like most Australians, we set the bar pretty low for learning other languages and passing on our mother tongue to our children. So although I didn't really speak that much Spanish because the bar was set so low, I actually thought I was pretty good at speaking Spanish. And my confidence was based on two things, my ability to count to 10 and to recite a single phrase, cabeza de huevo. That means egghead. And in playground walls of words, I'd drop in cabeza de huevo like a nuclear bomb. And a mushroom cloud of awe would form around me. And my enemies would be staring at me. And they'd know I was insulting them. But what was I saying? And my friends would be flanked on either side and they'd try and repeat me as best they could. Cabeza de huevo! Cabeza de huevo! And we shut down my enemies. But actually, to be honest, I was mostly ashamed of my Spanish heritage. My middle name is Remedios, and I used to just have these fantasies about having a middle name like Anne or Sarah. I was like, oh, Remedios, no one could pronounce it. The two things that I wasn't ashamed about in being Spanish was my grandfather, my Yayo, and my grandmother, my Yaya. Now, the failure to pick up other languages must run in the family because they had failed to assimilate into Australian culture. They hadn't really picked up English at all. So our relationship was kind of like a language exchange. They spoke Spanish to me, I spoke English to them. And, you know, because we're wogs, we saw each other every day. And, you know, I was really close to them, but I didn't really know much about their life before they came to Australia. And I guess, you know, in my self-absorbed childhood world, I just didn't think learning Spanish was that important. I had other things to do. But then there was a really important reason to learn Spanish. I hit puberty. And I grew up in a mostly Anglo-Saxon part of Sydney. And suddenly being Spanish was kind of exotic. And I was a gangly teenager from an all-girls Catholic high school, so I really needed all the help I could get. You know, my first boyfriend was really into the Spanish thing. You know, we'd be making out in his parents' basement. This was one time, and he said, hey, can you say something in Spanish? And I freaked out because my Spanish was limited to children's songs and food preparation. You know, I couldn't do Spanish sexy talk. But I was kind of grateful just to have a boyfriend, so I gave it my best. And I was stroking his back and his neck and kissing his lips and his chest. And I whispered into his ear, ¿Tienes hambre? Vamos a cenar en media hora. Are you hungry? We'll eat in half an hour. Me gustaría ir en bicicleta por el parque. I'd like to ride my bike through the park. Eres un cabeza de huevo. He actually really was. When I was 17, my grandfather was diagnosed with lung cancer. And it turned out okay, he had chemo and it turned out fine, but it kind of really shocked me because the one thing I loved most in life was stories. And I realized that I didn't even have my Yayo's own story. So I decided I was going to get it. I looked up an old dictionary of my father's, the Spanish-English dictionary, and I worked out the way to say, Cuéntame algo de tu vida en España. Tell me something about your life in Spain. And you could just see him getting really animated and excited, and he started saying something about la guerra civil. Guerra? I didn't even know what that word meant. So I looked it up in the dictionary. And guerra meant war. the Civil War of Spain. You know, I knew from Mum that he'd been a kid when it had happened and that he'd come from a Republican family and that his brothers had gone off to fight Franco in the Spanish Civil War and that he'd been sent off with Catholic priests and they'd saved his life, but that he had hated the Catholic Church his entire life. There were just so many things that I needed to find out. And then, I don't know, I finished school, I went to uni. I was going to get my Yayo story, but I really wanted to travel. I just had to see the world. And I was actually traveling through South America and Spain, and like an old motor, I don't know, chugging back into life, the left side of my brain just awakened, and this language that I'd always heard was suddenly really easy to speak. I was speaking Spanish. You know, I was traveling in South America, but all I wanted to do was go back to Sydney and sit down with my Yayo and record his story. I'd sit there for a week, whatever it took, you know, until I got his story in full. And I was actually traveling through Colombia when I got a call from Mum, and she said, Yayo's really sick. The cancer's come back. And it wasn't long after that that, you know, I had to rush back home to Sydney to the hospital. And the next few days are such a blur. You know, we spent day and night, just night after night, speaking to him softly in Spanish. Whenever he'd wake up and he was struggling to get the air that his lungs couldn't hold anymore. And then he died. It's taken me a long time to accept that I failed to get my Yayo story. And you know, I'm still learning Spanish. I'm still exploring its beautiful turns of phrase and works of literature. But there'll always be that irony that just as I found my Spanish voice, my Yayo lost his. Thanks.
That was Belinda Lopez, who, in addition to being a great storyteller, is also our features executive producer here at All the Best.
Thanks, Georgia.
You're also here with me. We're coming to you live from the This Is Not Art Festival.
Okay, well, let's go to something lighter now. And this next story is very light and very funny. It comes from another storytelling group in Perth called Bareface Stories. And the woman who tells this next story is called Andrea Gibbs. She's the co-creator of the group. She comes from a stand-up comedy background. And having heard this story, that doesn't surprise me at all. But like all good comics, Andrea definitely requires a language warning. So let's hear the story.
I have a theory. I believe that the longer you've been single and the more boring your job is, the higher the likelihood is you'll fall in love with a work colleague or a customer or, in my case, the delivery man. So 2 years ago, I was, this almost happened to me, I was working as a travel agent at STA Travel at Curtin University in Perth, and I fell in love with the delivery man. And it was love at first sight. He was beautiful. Tall, dark and handsome. He had beautiful broad shoulders, a chiseled jaw, a tight little bum under his board shorts. The kind of guy that I was like, he looks like he plays sport. My dad would totally dig this guy. And at 11:30 each day, when he walked past, it was like a Diet Coke ad from the 90s, and he was my 11:30 appointment. He was my Hawaiian island in a sea full of booking shitty Kentucky tours. The only thing was that he wasn't our delivery man. He was the courier for the business next door. So over this year and a half of knowing him, I didn't actually get to talk to him really. But it didn't matter because our relationship consisted of every time I'd be typing away on my computer, bored shitless, he would walk past our big glass shop front and he'd tip his hat to me and he'd wave to me and I would wave back to him and time would stop. And some days he would wave on his way back past and that was a great day. It was awesome. I was so in love with him. Now the thing is, like, at the time I was working in an office full of women and I was the only single lady there. So conversation generally revolved around what I could get up to on the weekend to fix my single status and also my deep love for the courier. And they would see this little relationship that was happening between me and him. Like, he'd walk past, he'd wave, I'd wave back, and they're like, oh my God, Gibbo, you got to go out there. You got to go out there and just make a move on him. Check him out, he's hot, mate. He's hot. Ride that. And I would want to. Like, I'd want to go out there and make a move, but I was gutless, you know. And I really, really did love this little wave routine that we had going on. It was just so sweet and innocent, and I was really enjoying that. It felt like that first time when you're on a date in high school with the boy that you like, and you're sitting in the movie theater with him, and your knees just touch and your hands just touch, and there's that electricity, and it's beautiful and it's romantic. But getting back to my theory, I was moving further and further away from that meeting point, and I was about to explode. So I had to do something. So I came up with a plan. I quit my job. But it was a plan, all right? Because I thought that if I quit my job, it would force me to finally make a move on the delivery man before my last day. And so that was my plan. And I told all my girlfriends at work, like, I'm going to quit. And they were very sad about that. But then I said, wait, ladies, I'm going to make a move on the courier. And they were very excited about that. They were like, come on, oh, awesome, awesome. You can go out there and you can say to him, like, oh, nice package you got there, mate. You know, like, you could say to him, like, I could book you a round the world trip to paradise, and we can fly in the Mile High Club, if you know what I mean. And I was like, no, that's not going to work. That's pretty naff. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to stick with this, like, non-verbal communication that we'd already established and had become very comfortable with. So on the way home, my second last day, I stopped into Officeworks and I got a whole bunch of coloured card. I was going to recreate Bob Dylan's Subterranean Blues music video for him. So I stop into Officeworks and I get these cards and this big texture, and I rush home and I start writing on these cards, and then my handwriting is so messy and I'm like, I can't, this looks horrible. And so I get my housemate, who's a graphic designer, to write them up for me, because in my head, for some reason, I'm like, if this delivery man sees I've got bad handwriting, then that's no deal. So I do up these cards and I take them to work my last day, and I rock up and I show the girls, and they're very excited. They're like, God, you've put in a lot of effort. And I'm like, well, it's the love of my life, you know. I'm not going to put in any less effort. And we're all very excited, and we're kind of like working away, tapping on our computers. And there's this weird tension in the office, like just excitement is building. And it gets to 11 o'clock and we're all kind of like looking around the window, kind of like, is he coming, is he coming? 11:30 comes and we're still looking, is he coming, is he coming, he's going to come. And he normally arrives at 11:30, so I'm like, come on. And 12 o'clock comes and he still hasn't arrived. And my heart starts to sink a little bit and I start panicking, because I'm like, this is my last day. Like, I'm going to have to come in on Monday and not get paid to, you know, do this, and I don't want to do that. And I guess it's 12:30 and I'm like, stuff this. And I get up out of my seat and I go towards the kitchen to make my lunch. And as I'm walking towards the kitchen, he walks past the shop front and the girls just lose it. They're like, fucking, there he goes, Andrea! Jesus, there he goes! And one of my workmates, Shad's like, you've missed him! Oh, you've missed him! He did all this hard work and you've missed him. It's like, it's all right, calm down, Shad, it's fine. I was always going to get him on the way back, all right? Just so he could whisk me away to his delivery van, and that would be awesome. And so I'm like, freaking, okay. And I go back to my desk and I grab my cards and I'm like, and there's people in the office, like students in the office, that are trying to book flights and Kentucky tours. And I'm like, hey guys, stick around. This is going to be a great show. It's going to be a great show. I've got an audience now, so it's awesome. And I'm like, crank up the stairs, Shaz. Like, crank up the stairs. And I get my cards, and I position myself near the glass window, and I turn and I see him walking back, and he looks at me, and I just go for it.
Hey, mister, stop. Today is my last day. No more waving ever again. Will you miss me? How much? Wow, that's loads. Do you like beer? Wow, me too. It's like we have so much in common. Beer and waving, waving and beer. I was wondering, do you have a girlfriend?
Wife. Boyfriend.
Me either.
And it's freaking awesome. He runs around to the shop door and he comes in and he grabs me and he grabs my hips and he bends me over and he plants this massive kiss on my face. It's like the movies and everyone is like clapping like, my God, this is awesome. And then he picks me up and he swings me around and my leg hits a chair, but like, I don't care because I'm in love. And when you're in love, there's no fucking pain. And he takes me out to his delivery van and he opens up the doors and he pushes me in all the mail and then we make sweet, sweet babies. That's what I thought was going to happen. The reality of the situation is that he had a girlfriend and I didn't have a plan B. And everyone in the shop is just looking at me, not sure what to do, just waiting for my reaction to take their cue. And I just want to crawl up into a little ball. And I try to do that. I slide down the window. I sit on the ground and then I look up at him and make this motion of like, you can go now, yep. You can go now, don't need you any, thanks very much. And I put my head down in the card and wait for him to walk away, but he doesn't because Shaz says, he's coming around, Ange, he's coming around. And he walks around and he comes into the shop and I put my cards down and I walk up to him and he's like, oh, it's your last day, is it? I'm like, yeah. And he kind of leans in and he gives me a hug and I'm like, that feels good. But then he pats me on the back. It's a sympathy hug. You'll be right, mate. And he's like, nice to meet you, and walks off. And I went back to my desk that afternoon and I felt horrible. Like, I was really just kicking myself for not having a different plan of action if that happened. And I'm sitting there and the girls at work are like, you were right, Angela. I'm like, yeah. I'm okay, I do that stuff all the time. I'm fine, you know, happens to me all the time. And I'm trying to save face and I get in my car on the way home from work and I have a bit of a cry, but when I get home, my beautiful dog is there to greet me and I just look at him and he's so happy to see me and I'm like, you know, just harden the F up, Andrea. Like, come on, you know, like, it worked because you brought a little bit of joy into this guy's life just for a little moment. And you know, he's probably going to tell his friends and bring joy into their lives too. And, you know, that's worth it, I reckon, for a little bit of sacrifice of your dignity and some craft paper. Thank you very much.
That was Andrea Gibbs with our last story here from Newcastle. A huge thank you to Adam Zwee, who recorded all those stories for us.
All the Best is produced at FBI Radio Sydney in association with SYN in Melbourne. Our show is distributed across Australia via the Community Radio Network and is supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Today's show was produced by Adam Zwee, me, Georgia Moody,
and me, Belinda Lopez.
Our executive producers are Jordana Caputo, Eliza Silos, and Jesse Cox. Make sure you join us next week. And in the meantime, check out our website. It's allthebestradio.com.